Well, I haven't given a talk now for over 3 weeks, which is a long time for me. And I wonder if I have anything to say. But the stronger feeling I have about that is that talking about practice doesn't seem very interesting. It seems like there's something, should be something much more immediate than talking about something. And so the question is, what is it that's more immediate? And what is it that's here for all of us that's not someplace else, not something we have to think about, but what is it that's available right here and now that is liberating, that's freeing, that's intimate, that's deeply satisfying? What is it that's here? What can we find here? And if you listen to my words as if the words about something, then you might miss the opportunity of what's here. Here are some wonderful ideas. Take the ideas home and ponder them and think about them. So that was really intellectually stimulating and challenging and interesting, and that's great. But if you did that, then today I'd feel kind of bad. A little, you know, because it's not about ideas. When I think about mindfulness practice, I think that there are two major aspects to mindfulness in and of itself. And one is the quality of presence. And the other is the aspect of recognition. So presence and recognition. And there has to be presence. We have a presence in the present moment, here and now. And then when that presence is here and now, then there's a recognition of what this is. And some teachers, or sometimes we emphasize one, sometimes the other, sometimes both of them, presence and recognition. And but today, the idea of the presence seems very important to me. And and I keep finding in my mouth that I want to say that we bring presence to the present moment, something we bring presence. But that's not really, you know, it can be right, we do that. But presence isn't something we bring. Presence is something that's already here. And in fact, the sense of presence can be so strong for some people that they will anthropomorphize the presence. And sometimes they'll, you know, in some traditions, like in Sufism, they might, or people have called it the beloved. It's something very powerful. Some people might call it the presence of God. But the sense of vitality or aliveness or presence that can kind of emanate not through our thoughts, not through our ideas about things, but rather kind of from our being. Kind of almost like, for me, I feel it almost like arising out of the torso, out of the body. And sometimes it's so palpable, so powerful, and so important. And I know it's not always so easy to feel that, because human beings are often creatures of thoughts, of thinking. And it's easy to get pulled into the world of thoughts, what we're thinking about and how we feel about things, what we want, what we're afraid of, how to fix things, how to have a conversation, what I'm supposed to say, what I'm supposed to have said. You know, kind of get pulled into this world of thinking. And it can be a very rich world, the world of thinking. And it can be very compelling. One of the compelling qualities of thinking is that it has the promise or the hope. It seems to offer the promise of hope that you can think your way out of your problems. Or you can think your way into solutions for how to live a deeply happy and satisfying life. So if you just kind of think about it enough. And that's why sometimes listening to Dharma talks or you know, the words of talks or reading Dharma books is such a terrible thing to do. Because, but stay until the end of the talk, please. because it just more words. And it just kind of feeds into that part of the mind which already is thinking about words and working things out and thinking about things. And, oh, she didn't waste any time. Oh, sorry. And but the sense of presence. And sometimes one of the key things that can be done is to stop thinking and to give up our attempts to think things through or to think out solutions or answers. And even sometimes, even in the most difficult circumstances we might find ourselves in, sometimes stopping to think is sometimes a really wise thing to do. And stopping to think, stop thinking. Stop thinking can be a really wise thing to do. Not because we then become a zombie or uninterested or uninvolved in what's going on, but rather when we stop thinking in that kind of surface chatter of the mind and are very present for what's happening, then there can be other forms of intelligences, other ways of understanding that have a chance to show themselves and reveal themselves. And the ability to respond can come, for example, from the heart, it can come from the belly, it can come from the body, it can come from some deep place in the psyche. We never know what's going to come. And sometimes there are corners of our psyche which are much wiser than that part of the psyche, that little corner of the psyche, which tends to dominate the thinking about things, and analyzing and thinking about the future, planning. So sometimes in the greatest challenges, sometimes very interesting practice to stop thinking about it and see what happens, see what goes on, see what arises. And I've known plenty of people who have, when they've had a huge life issue to address and to answer, what to do with their life or whether to make some big choice in their life, have chosen to go off, for example, on a meditation retreat and not thought about it for a week, but rather sit in silence, let go of their thinking, be with their breath, be with their body. And then the end of the week, something else can bubble up, some other perspective can arise that can't arise when we're always seeing through things through the filter of what we're thinking about, what we're talking, you know. I think it's interesting to use the analogy of being in the ocean. That if you're swimming on the surface of the ocean, and say there's a big storm and waves and wind and currents, and it can be quite tumultuous. And you might think that, you know, in order to have some peace, you have to kind of try to stop the waves, which sometimes doesn't work, right? And sometimes if you're in a boat in a big storm, you just kind of pull down your sails and just kind of wait it out. And it's a little bit noisy and you're walked around a little bit, but usually, often that can work. But if you're always on the surface, it's always going to feel the storm of it all. But if you know, if you go under the surface of the ocean, if you're a scuba diver, for example, and you sink underneath, you don't have to go many feet underneath the surface of the ocean where it starts becoming very peaceful, very quiet, very calm. And you can actually, sometimes you go 8 feet underneath or 10 feet underneath and look up and you can see the waves up there and you see the churning going on up there. But you feel like somehow there's this great presence, this great spaciousness, this great calm or peacefulness that it offers a perspective to, a very different perspective to what's happening at the surface. If we're living on the surface of our lives, then we might think we have to stop the waves or wait or fix things or engage in what's going on there on the surface. But if we can sink down into a sense of presence or into a sense of deep calm or openness or kind of a wider sensitivity, presence is a kind of sensitivity that for me at least kind of seems to ooze, flow out of the body, but then it's not limited to the body. I think it's maybe an optical illusion of sorts, or sensory illusion of sorts, but when I'm most settled into a sense of presence, that presence seems to expand, extend beyond the confines of my body. And it can feel quite large. I can feel quite large, as if everything that I'm aware of in consciousness is being held within a bubble of consciousness, a bubble of awareness, a bubble of sensitivity, a bubble of presence. And so when something happens, there's all this space within which for it to happen. But if I'm only thinking about things, then often I find my world is really narrow and tight. And I see this very dramatically with at times when my children are quite challenging, is that if I am writing my thoughts closely and they are being difficult, then it's a difficult situation. But when they're being difficult and I'm there in a very open, spacious way, then it's not a difficult situation. Something has to be dealt with, it's a difficulty, but the situation is not difficult. The situation is actually quite peaceful, quite expansive, quite big. The china shatters on the kitchen floor. Wow. Why did you push it off the table? You know, I think we need to talk about this or do something. As opposed to, you know, that's the center of the universe, this moment, that particular point, and the anger and the concerns and the, you know. There's a huge world of difference between riding something really close and then riding something that receives it in a great wide ocean of presence. So how do we do that? How do we make a switch from being narrow, being tight, being confined in our thoughts, to being open and spacious in this wide presence that exists in the body? And I think that's one of the keys, at least for me, is that it exists in the body. It's not limited to the body, but for me it's one of the primary kind of ways of understanding or accessing it, is the felt sense of the body, or the sense of perception, or the sense of awareness that seems to reside in the body. Because once I kind of settle into that, rather than thinking my way or seeing my way into what's going on, but into the sense of the body, how it feels or senses or is aware of what's happening, then there seems to be a much greater spacious quality to the situation. And maybe it's a little bit of a paradox, you know, you go in a sense, only to go out into something really large. So, you know, sometimes I think that it's very easy to have life upside down. And what I have in mind here is that if we take the human being to be kind of like a pyramid or a triangle, and say we put thinking at the top of it because it's so wonderful and great and all these great things can happen, and all the great things in life, you know, inventions and creativity, and so much has a genesis in thought. Read the papers and almost everything happens in papers except for natural disasters. You know, some human thought had to kind of began there. The pinnacle of great inventions. The pinnacle of human life is our capacity to think creatively, maybe. Maybe you could say that. So it's put it at the top of the pyramid. You know, and sometimes when something is insecure, it's good to put it at the top of this pyramid. So we'll put it, give it a high status, our thinking mind. But then if the pyramid is upside down and the point is facing down, it's going to be really wobbly. And what presence can provide is to kind of turn it up, put it right side up. So certainly the top of the pyramid can be our thinking world, but it's supported by this great breadth and strength foundation of our body, our being, our awareness, our presence, our feelings, our heart, so much more of who we are. And then it's safe to think. Then maybe it's actually much more clear and cleaner to think. Thinking can be much more creative when it has that kind of foundation. But when we have it upside down and we think of thinking as all where it's all at, you know, then when we have it upside down, we're very, actually much more fragile, much more easy to topple over. And sometimes I have a sense that there's almost like a switch or a very simple choice to be made between getting lost in thought to letting go of that lostness, letting go of that kind of preoccupation with thinking and relaxing into something really bigger, bigger sense of awareness and presence. And it's interesting that kind of to watch the course of a day and the course of an hour, course of a minute, how the mind kind of sways back and forth between those. And I haven't figured out any way to stay in one mode all the time. You know, just well, presence is really great. You know, I'll just kind of just rest there and be happy, happy ever after. I haven't figured that out yet. But what I'm very aware of is that there's kind of, you know, it goes back and forth. I get really interested in something, and sometimes my thought gets really involved in that, and then I have to notice that at some point and say, do I want to stay there, or do I want to kind of let the pendulum swing and kind of open up again? And so I'm kind of watch. I try to track, you know, that sense of where my presence is, where my attention is, where my involvement with life is. Is my involvement with life caught up in thoughts or through the vehicle of thoughts, or is it much more broad and spacious? And then where do I want it to be? And what's the choices I can make going back and forth? I think meditation is very helpful, regular meditation practice. I think of it like brushing your teeth, or, you know, good dental hygiene is brushing your teeth every day. Good mental hygiene is meditating every day. And if you don't meditate every day, you'll get cavities, mental cavities. and one of the aspects of meditating every day is that it can, if you practice in a regular way and maybe have a little bit of luck, it can give you a strong sense of presence, strong sense of silence, of stillness, that's very close to presence. And then that kind of carries over into the daily life. So it's more available in daily life. It's more ready to show itself or ready to be there. A daily meditation practice is similar to having a time every day for stillness and silence. Some people have said that spiritual life grows out of stillness and silence. And I don't know if it's always the case, but I think it often points to something very important. And that can be external. I mean, you can go into a situation that's still and silent. I have very powerful kind of visceral memories of sitting in Zen monasteries in Japan and the stillness and the silence of these kind of pristine, kind of early morning, quiet, very still rooms, and having an experience of this kind of great stillness of the place. And then at some point, discover that stillness inside of us. And then we don't need it externally anymore. And so when the situation is chaotic, that you realize the stillness is here. You're carrying it with you. Sometimes when I have the kids who are just completely batty at home, sometimes I feel really lucky to be able to know this place of stillness that's there all the time. And sometimes I wish I had it. Because it's just not so easy. Sometimes it doesn't seem to come so easily. So sometimes when people point to this idea of presence, living in kind of presence, you sometimes use little kind of expressions like listen with your eyes or listen with your chest, or they'll say look with your ears rather than with your eyes. Kind of let your perception of what's happening. Open up so that it's not through the usual vehicle, usual channels by which you're aware of what's happening. So if you're a looking person, that's kind of primary way in which you engage in the world is by seeing. Then relax the sense of that what seeing through the eyes, and imagine that you're seeing through your ears, and you might find that there's a whole different way that you take in the situation. Or if your primary way of being in the world is by hearing, then hear with your body, with your chest rather than with your ears. Or if your primary way of being in the world is thinking, then some people will say think with your belly. How do you do that? You know, think from down here rather than from up here. And shift the mode of how you think you perceive the world. And when you shift the mode, then you might have a sense of a container or a holder or a stillness or a peace that kind of goes together with the act of perception, the awareness or being conscious. When we're engaged in thinking in the normal way about life, thinking about things, and that thinking is often what precludes the possibility of feeling the stillness, the silence, the spaciousness, the peace that maybe is here, right now. Outside of the boundaries of your concerns, your worries, your feelings, your sadnesses, your angers, to kind of shift the perception outside of the boundaries of your preoccupations. What's there? I think of presence as kind of like a pearl. Sometimes it feels that way. Pearls are beautiful, shiny, precious. And pearls are created by sand that irritates the oyster. And sometimes the sense of presence, precious presence that I can feel, is highlighted by the difficulties or the irritations, the challenges of life. So rather than thinking that it's one or the other, that, oh, if I can have a sense of presence, then, you know, that's really great, I can just relax, it's peaceful and wonderful, and I won't have any problems. Sometimes actually the very problems or difficulties, the places where we suffer, if we bring presence to that, they become the sand that makes the presence grow and become stronger, more palpable, more available. And rather than making some kind of hard distinction that should be one or the other, it's actually quite precious to allow these things to coexist together, to really recognize what our suffering is, difficulties, and then to hold it in this bigger container of our presence within, this great presence that has no boundaries, has no limits. And it's not always comfortable then, because you feel that interface between the suffering and the presence. But that interface, the suffering can make you actually feel the presence more acutely. The peace that's much bigger and holds it all. And I find it very interesting, that interface, and hang out there, rather than thinking, oh, this problem shouldn't be here, this suffering shouldn't be here. Open up to something bigger that holds it. And then every once in a while, a very powerful sense of presence happens seemingly by accident. Something will happen in life where the normal thinking mode by which we're always engaged in the world and seeing the world drops away. And the thinking mode often is kind of like a armor that keeps so much of the aliveness, presence within us at bay, at a distance, or shut off. And when that thinking mode somehow shuts off or quiets down in some powerful way, a powerful rush of presence can arise in people. And some people are just blown away by what is available, what happens to them when that thinking mind relaxes, stops, and the sense of perception that becomes very full and peaceful and still bubbles up from inside of them. And so we have, you know, expressions like the presence of God, or experiencing God, or the beloved, or, you know, great peace and great sense of being connected to some spiritual reality. So the last thing I'll say is that repeat myself, there's two aspects of mindfulness practice. There's presence and then there's recognition. And today's talk is really talking much more about the presence and the value of it. And that this presence is available. It's not something different from who you are. It is who you are. Presence is one of the key aspects of what a human being is, a sense of presence, aliveness, vitality, consciousness, awareness. And it's not something to create and make, but it's rather something to allow. It's rather something to relax into, rather than something to make happen. So a sense of allowing. What can you allow it to happen, rather than to make it happen? So I hope that as you leave today and go out into your day, that you might experiment with allowing something that's different than your thinking. Be who you are. So we have a few minutes. If anyone would like to ask any questions, you're welcome to do that. Yes.
Although I'm a little nervous about this, I think this question is related to what you're talking about. It has to do with loving kindness and presence or stillness. I've spent many years in a tradition prior to coming here. In a tradition prior to coming here.
Yeah.
Wherein when one affirms or visualizes, there's a sense of Divine Mother or Heavenly Father or God to whom one is addressing the affirmation or the request. When I practice loving kindness and I ask that I be free of suffering, the root of suffering, and the people I love be free, and the people I hate be free of suffering, the root of suffering, I feel something, but it dawned on me a few days ago that I don't actually know who or what in Buddhism it is that I'm asking this of. Is it this generalized sense of presence you were talking about, or stillness, or is there even an answer?
Do you need to ask anybody? Is it a petition? Does it need to be a petition? Is it enough that it's just your heartfelt wish?
The more I practice it, the more it becomes a heartfelt wish. I suppose I'd answer that by saying that my assumption would be that it's not within my power to accept and requesting that it be the case, that it's within my power to free anybody else from suffering or the root of suffering. So I guess I'm attached to the structure or the model in which that kind of request is being addressed to a divine being or a presence.
Yeah, so maybe that's something for you to explore a little bit, whether that serves you or is appropriate or something you really believe in. I can help you with an exploration, but I can't give you an answer.
Am I supposed to say something now?
No? No? But if you want to explore it some other time, talk about it some more, happy to.
At the moment you realize that you're thinking and that you're caught up in your thinking, what are the options for you to think about it some more, that you're caught up in your thinking?
So when you're caught up in your thinking, you notice it, what are the options you have? And thinking some more, or just, you know, this is great, and plunge back in is one option, right? Yeah, it depends what you're thinking about, right?
Or is that a big game that you
have? I've known people who, on retreat, for example, who have had a hard time in the retreat or in their life or whatever, and finally they had this really juicy fantasy. Maybe it's a wonderful sexual fantasy or something, just, wow, it's like this is the best. And they kind of pop out, they realize what's going on, they come out and laugh, wow, this, I'm fantasizing. But you know, it's been hard. I think I'll just go back and... This is much better than what was going on. So, that's one option. Sometimes there's so much you can do around thoughts. I mean, it's a huge practice, practicing with thinking. I think of it as a universe in itself. And so I wouldn't want to say it's just one thing to do. But I think exploring and being curious about the phenomena of thinking is a very useful practice. What is, you know, rather than being caught up in what we're thinking about, step back and just say, what is thinking? What's going on here with a thought, with thinking mind? And why do humans think? And what's the nature of this thinking? Is it words? Is it images? Where is it happening? How fast is it happening? Or what is it like to be involved in my thinking? Can I have enough presence to watch my thinking and see what it's like to be thinking? Am I really tight with it? Is there Velcro? Am I riding close? Am I attached there? Do I have emotions and feelings around my thinking? Do I have beliefs connected to both the particular thoughts I'm having, or do I have beliefs about thinking itself? Some people have very deep but unexamined beliefs about the nature of thinking. Everything you think is true, you know, they believe that this is the way that we have to engage in the world, is by thinking our way through the world. And so they can step back enough and be curious about this phenomenon of thinking. And the more we can learn about it, learning about it is one of the ways of becoming free of something. So rather than pushing it away or letting go of it too quickly, study it, get to know it really well. And then when you know it well, then you might find you have the ability to let go. But letting go sometimes naively, some people let go too easily. So that's why it's really good to study something for a long time, for a while, get to know it well. And then you know when it's wise to let go and when it's not. So even with thinking, even though today's talk was about presence and the problems of thinking, we don't want to have an antagonistic relationship to thinking, as if we're never supposed to think and you're not supposed to think if you're spiritual. And thinking is great, it's a very important part of life. And so you have to be wise about when it's appropriate to let go of thinking and let something else just dominate, and when to let something else dominate but then also engage in thinking about what's going on, to engage in a lot of thoughts, consideration. So there's so much to thinking. I think thinking is so fascinating. It's such a great thing, as a lot of other things are. So does that at all address your question?
Yes.
Well enough? Marilyn.
This is just a comment, but it's always really embarrassing when you're thinking so much that you've already thought through a sort of like a thought process that someone proposes. Or let's say you have a situation, you're in a situation, someone's like, well, how about if we do this? And you're sitting there like, well, I already thought through that and this and this and this. And that's when it's always embarrassing, because you sort of feel like off the plane with the person you're dealing with. And so that's kind of like an area where thinking is, you kind of catch yourself.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So? Thank you. I hope it made sense to talk today. And that was the whole point, is to have some sense.